Hello, hello. I am Karen Jean-Francois, and this is the Women in Data podcast, a podcast where every other week I interview some of the most inspiring women working in data. They discuss how data is used in various industries, share their knowledge and experience in the field, and equip you with tips to help you overcome challenges on your career and feel great. Let's get straight to it. I am so excited about today's episode. We are joined by a superstar, and it's someone I've connected with, I think, a year and a half ago, maybe. I remember I was back home and we were having a conversation around working in the US and these companies that are giving you unlimited holidays, but actually it might not be as cool as we think it is. And I am so pleased to be speaking with Megan today, especially as we're celebrating a milestone on the podcast. So this is 4 years of the Women in Data podcast, and I couldn't have wished for a better guest to join me on the podcast. So before I invite Megan to introduce herself, although I'm pretty sure that some of you, if not all of you, will know about her already. So the topic we're going to be touching on today is really all around the agented roles that we have in data and how important they are. I remember, I think, when I started my new role in November 2023, I was thinking, I don't actually work in AI. So I moved from analytics to AI, and I was thinking, I don't actually work in AI because I'm not doing the technical side of AI. But the reality is that I am, and this is exactly what we're going to be talking about with Megan. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me. And I'm so honored to be able to be featured on this milestone episode. And, you know, I don't know if all of your audience knows me, but that was a very generous introduction. And so for those who don't know me, I'm Megan. I work at DeepNote as a data advocate, and I have been a longtime listener of the Women in Data podcast. I remember this was something that I binged when I was first getting into data. So it's kind of a full circle moment to be here and to be here on a special episode, because I know that, you know, I maybe like 3 years back would have been wanting to listen to an episode like this. So I'm super excited for this conversation.
This is so amazing. And I love that you're saying that, because it brings me back to when we had our first chat and you told me, I was like, oh, so I host the Women in Data podcast. And you're like, yeah, I know, I listened to the podcast. And I was thinking, wait, what? So I'm also very pleased that you're here with me and we can have this conversation. So Megan, you do so much for the community, and you mentioned what you're doing at DeepNote, but could you maybe tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, I am a data advocate at DeepNote. So I was just telling Karen this before we came online. Data advocate, synonymous with developer advocate, but developer advocate is still a very niche term. So for those who have never heard of developer advocate, I don't blame you. I only like properly learned what this role was like maybe 6 months ago. But it is a role where you are acting as the liaison between a company's product and its users. And the developer advocate is advocating for the developers who use the tool by creating helpful resources, such as documentation, like tutorials, things like that. I'm also raising awareness of the product and also engaging the users so that they can use the product more efficiently. That is, in a nutshell, what developer advocates do. And I have kind of been doing this like data advocacy role for maybe like a year or two, even before I joined DeepNote. And it was completely on accident. I started like advocating or creating content about data about two and a half years ago on LinkedIn, when, as I had mentioned, I was at the time trying to pivot into data, and I was like binging a bunch of podcasts like Women in Data to try to get my way in from my finance background. And it was a really tough transition. But after I successfully made that pivot, I was like, I really want to, one, share my journey, but two, also attract people within the community who understood the same struggles that I was going through or the day-to-day things that maybe are funny to me. Like, I was like, I know that there's a world of people out there who can identify with this stuff. And so the best way to communicate with them is to put myself out there. And I identified LinkedIn as a great place to find those data people, because prior to breaking in, when I was still working in finance, I was kind of just silently lurking on LinkedIn. And I was like, wow, there's this whole world of data content and like these people who are very passionate about data, data analytics, data science, that I wanted to connect with. And so once I became a data analyst back in 2021, I was like, this is such a cool, amazing community. And I just want to like make friends and find people to learn from. And so in the process, I was like, you know, I'm just going to document my journey and like my learnings. And along the way, a lot of people within that community resonated with it, or they found something in common with what I had to write. And so from day one, that has always been my philosophy, which is like, I'm not trying to really, I don't know, like, I'm not trying to like preach anything or inspire anyone. Like, I'm just trying to talk about my own personal experiences and like, in hopes that like, if somebody else is going through the same problem, I can be a resource for them to be like, okay, like she navigated this in this certain way, so like I can do it too. So my content and like my voice from day one has always been like from a place of wanting to be, I don't know, like relatable, because I'm just me, you know, like I'm not like a CEO or anything like that. I don't inspire anybody. But
one day maybe,
but not right now. I'm just, you know, just writing about my daily struggles, and the amount of people who have like resonated with it has been really eye-opening.
I think, you know, when you share very authentic content the way you do, people can tell that it's not a facade and you're really sharing about things that you are experiencing. And that is very important, because as you said, having your content being relatable to other people is quite key. I love that you're going through this journey and you're sharing your learnings and the challenges that you're having and the funny moments as well. So I know we started the year with Raula, who was talking about how every time she was learning about something, she was writing about it so that others could benefit from the learning as well. So I really love this idea of sharing your learnings around. And I have to say that, you know, when you're talking about the funny things and the challenges, there is one post that made me giggle a bit that you share, and that was around, I think it was the LinkedIn top voice. Where you were saying, you know, to be LinkedIn top voice, you need to have contributed to that many articles that they actually ask you to contribute to. And I'm thinking, having these kind of things actually spoken about is quite powerful, because I know a lot of leaders, and I know that myself are included, sometimes we're thinking, you know how social media works, right? You see someone who is doing really well, sharing a lot of things, and you start playing this comparison game sometimes and feeling like, oh, I want to have that and this. So understanding what it entails is quite important for others. And I could see in your comments that quite a few people were like, oh, okay, that's how it works. Maybe I'm not interested in the end.
Yeah, no, after I made that post, I started seeing a lot more conversation about the truth of that badge. And so now I feel like it's pretty well known that those yellow badges are tied to just like contributing to these AI generated articles. And I remember I also made like a TikTok about it, where I was just like going on a little rant about it was basically that post, but in spoken form. And I was like, just so you know, these yellow badges are completely different from the blue general LinkedIn top voice badges, right? The blue badges are a little bit more, or they are more exclusive. You can't just contribute to an article and like automatically get the badge, right? And so I made that post, and then like a day or two afterward, I got that blue badge. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like I thought this was, you know, like I was so happy. But at the same time, like I saw a whole bunch of people got that blue badge too, like regardless of following size. And so I'm just like, you know, like these things, they're just shiny they're like vanity objects that these social media platforms kind of do to incentivize you to like contribute more to the machine. And so you have to keep these things in mind. Like the yellow badge, like there was a level of kind of like gaming the system to get that. And then the blue badge, there's also a level of gaming the system to get that too. So I always try to be transparent and be like, at this level of content creation, like there are some things that look cool, but here's the reality. And I'm not scared to talk about that reality.
Yeah, which is absolutely amazing. But this is a super interesting topic, and I'm thinking I'm being a bit selfish talking about this right now. So let's move to what the listener wants to hear about.
And no, please, selfish.
I would love to talk about, you know, the obsession we have with technical skills when it comes to working in data. So as I said, when I started my new role in November, I had this kind of, am I really working in AI? Am I not working in AI? And I remember having the same thing when I was working in data. And it was not really, am I working in data? Because I was working on the technical side, but mm-hmm. I was kind of being judgmental of people who were calling them data people when they were not on a technical role. And then that changed over time because I learned a lot in my journey in data. So that changed a bit, but I feel like there is still this kind of stereotypical that to really work in data, you need to be a technical person, which is how you started, but then you shifted towards a different position. So I would love to hear about your experience doing that.
Yeah, of course. I totally identify with that obsession because, as you had mentioned, when I was first breaking into data as a data analyst, I was like, I have to learn how to code. Like, coding is the most important thing. And like, if I don't know how to code, then I am a worthless data professional, right? And so in the first 2 years as a data person, first as a data analyst, and then as a data scientist, I was like, I need to like be coding every day to be considered successful. Heck, I even got like a SQL neon sign in the corner of my room, right? Like, I was like, okay, now I know how to code. So like I'm proficient, right? Like this is all I need to know. But it turned out in both of those roles as a data analyst and data scientist, it was all of the non-technical skills that truly mattered. Like no manager of mine was ever going to be like, okay, show me whether you can code this. No, it was like, they're going to be watching me when I am presenting an analysis to a stakeholder or like communicating with a client or like managing their needs, right? So when I had realized that, I was like, oh my gosh, before I became a data analyst, I was a consultant. I was like a financial consultant. And those were like the primary skills that I had learned, those soft skills of presentation, communication, written communication, things like that, that when I was in the process of pivoting, I was like, those skills don't matter. They're soft skills. Like all I need in my toolbox are like coding skills, right? I need to learn like this technology and that technology. And so after I had made that pivot, I had successfully pivoted, I was like, I don't need those skills anymore. But time and time again, I found myself going back to those old skills. And I was like, oh, wait, like maybe those soft skills do come in handy. And then over time, as I was talking to more people, I realized that like this was not just something I was experiencing. It was a pattern in that like I was hearing from more senior folks that the more you progress in your career, the more it is those soft, like intangible things that make you stand out and make you get to that next level. It's like those strategic skills that you really can't like learn from a course and you can't really like display it in a portfolio, but you learn it with experience and over time. And so now as a data advocate, where those soft skills are 50% or more of my daily job, because I have to be creating content, I have to deliver talks, I have to do presentations, I have to talk with customers, I'm like, I'm so glad that I started from that foundation of those soft skills. And then the technical skills are really the cherry on top. And together, when you have that pyramid of like technical skills as like the top of the pyramid and then the foundation of the soft skills, I'm like, that is a rare thing for professionals to have in this industry, because if you have the technical skills and you're able to like share what you have developed or built with business stakeholders, that is like you are a full package right there. And it took me many years and many different roles to realize that.
Yeah, I think you got to that conclusion faster than me, to be fair. I think I spent about, sorry, no, you said you started working in 2021?
21, yeah.
Yeah. So I started about 11 years ago. Yeah, I think my first experience in data was 2011. But I was still at university at that time. And then first proper full-time job was 2012. It took me 5 years to realize that maybe the technical skills were not the ones for me. And I love what you're describing here around, you know, this pyramid where you have at the top the technical skills that are the golden nuggets that allow you to do some of the work. And then you have the foundation at the bottom of your pyramid, which are the communication skills, the project management that helps you actually communicate what you're doing, run through your, running a data science project effectively. And that actually adds a lot of value to the technical skills that you have. But it's like an iceberg. Everything that people want to see and talk about is the technical skills at the moment. And I feel like this is probably, you know, when you are talking about how when you started your career in data, you were thinking the soft skills you had before, so that were your primary skills, you didn't need them anymore. So I feel it's more probably because there's so much advertisement around technical courses for data professionals.
Oh, yeah.
You learn how to code and all the boot camps, become a data scientist, and that's all it is about. And we've created this kind of bubble of this is what being a data scientist means. But now the conversation is shifting a bit. And as you were describing the fact that these skills were crucial to leadership, I'm thinking there is also like a parallel career path where you can be a data scientist, but being in a more commercial or business oriented role, which is a position where I found myself in for the last 6 years, I think.
I think a similar, like a parallel to that is how there's like data analysts versus business analysts. So like, there's no such thing as a business scientist, right? But like, you know, a data scientist who is a little bit more on the practical side. I'm sure they exist, but I can't think of like a name for it or like a recognized kind of role for it. Actually, no, I take that back because I can't believe I forgot to talk about this, but something I talk about a lot are citizen data scientists. And citizen data scientists are those who are not data scientists by training, but they are folks throughout the business who have along the way picked up data science skills. And in this day and age, that is so possible because of AI, right? Like anybody, if they try, can pick up data science, especially with the help of AI tools. And especially now that other parts of the business are realizing how important data science is and data literacy, more and more non-technical folks are picking up data science skills without needing the actual data science title. And so I guess like I didn't think of them initially because they're not data scientists by title, and that's not what they are brought into the organization to do. But along the way, they're realizing, hey, these data skills are important, and my team needs me to like put data skills or bring in data skills to my everyday job. And so they might like pick that up through courses or using like AI code generators, right? But in this day and age, I think that kind of role is more and more prevalent. But maybe it's a little bit different from what you're doing.
Yeah, it's quite different. But what I'm thinking, what you're describing, I see a lot of parallel on the data analytics side. So when you see there are some data analysts that are not called data analysts. Especially when you're finding the finance teams or marketing teams sometimes that have been in the organization for a while, and they've been, I mean, the things they can do with Excel put to shame things that we do with SQL sometimes. And this is from years and years of practice of doing these things. But then you also have the new ones that are thinking they're in a different role, but then they have the need to do some analytics, and then they pick up the skills because now, I mean, as you said, it's very easy to access these skills nowadays.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned your role as a developer advocate and you explained a bit what that means and what you're doing in the organization. But I think a lot of the skills you mentioned around communications and the presentations that you're doing are key to your role. And you took that from your finance consulting background. But I feel like there is a strong parallel with what you've been doing on a daily basis with posting on LinkedIn. And you mentioned TikTok. I had no clue you were on TikTok. The only social media I use is LinkedIn because this is how much I can handle.
I totally understand that feeling.
It's like, I remember my sister, so my younger sister, she stayed with us during the pandemic. And then, I mean, bless her, she got stuck in a small flat in London for 6 months. And she set up an Instagram profile for me. And it was starting to get a bit of traction. And as soon as she left, I was just like, I'm closing that down now. No. Bye.
Imagine where it could be now.
Well, nowhere, because I would not have been posting on it.
That's true. It does take work. I know that firsthand.
Yeah, I think the work and also there are two elements of it. So the work of it, and I'm also very terrified that I will spend my day scrolling on Instagram and I'm thinking I do not have time for this right now. So maybe
a very valid fear. I still struggle with figuring out that boundary. It's just, you gotta set the working modes on your phone. Mm. Like, okay, from 9 to 5, do not give me any alerts about Instagram or TikTok or else I will go down rabbit holes.
Yeah, I do not have any notifications on my phone except for WhatsApp because there is my family. That does not stop me from clicking on the apps. So.
Love it.
Right. So I would love to hear your view on this parallel between the content creator and the developer advocate / data advocate that you're doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge parallel because a big part of my role is creating content for DeepNote so that we can increase awareness of our company brand and our product. And the whole reason I got this job in the first place was because I was noticed through my content creation on LinkedIn and the platform that I have built from that process. And so my company saw that I already have this skill set and that I have already developed a following that they deemed was a relevant audience. And so they're like, you know, we should bring her on full time. But it was good that I already had practice with the writing skills that are needed to do daily content creation and also being somewhat in the public eye. That is also very useful for things like the talks that I have to give and like the conferences that I have to go to. So I already had informal practice doing these things. And now it's kind of just taken to the next level where I have to do it as a full-time job, which kind of puts some pressure on this thing that I was doing, you know, just as a hobby on the side before. So TBD on like, you know, whether that's a good thing or not. Cause, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I like doing this as a hobby. But then when you have to do it as a full-time job, it's like there's some pressure there. So some days I'm like, I love that I get to do this thing that was a hobby as a full-time job. But then other days I'm like, oh, wait, I have to do this thing that was a hobby as a full-time job. So it's kind of a struggle, but so many parallels. And it was a very intentional leap from the level I was doing it at to where how I'm doing it now.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I totally get it. So before you were doing something because you liked it, you were doing it for fun, and now you actually have the pressure of you being paid for it and your performance is measured for it. So that changes a bit there.
Exactly. Yeah. Because when I was just doing it on my own, I'm like, okay, today I feel like posting this. Today I feel like posting this. And that doesn't really fly when you have to do it on a measurable basis.
Yeah, it's a bit like starting your own business. So when you start your side hustle and it becomes your full-time business and you have to deal with all these things.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Something you were mentioning before made me think of user experience, and I wonder if this is something you have to learn about in your role now.
So there is a role that sits within the developer relations umbrella, which is what, so as a developer advocate, which is what I am, that sits in this broader umbrella of roles called developer relations. And another role that also sits in this umbrella is called developer experience, or like I think somebody who has this role would be called a developer experience engineer, where you do have to have more of an empathy for user experience so that you can create resources that help them in that experience. My role is not squarely in that role, but absolutely you have to be able to understand the pain points that customers are going through so that you can create resources for them. And the way that that comes into play in my role is our product managers are constantly interviewing our top users and doing like monthly check-ins with them. And sometimes I'll sit in on those calls and maybe even create a case study around it where we're like, hey, this was the problem that our customer was facing before they started using DeepNote. And this is what their data pipelines look like now using DeepNote. And this is what they hope to get to. And so that case study has to be written from the perspective of that customer and other customers like them so that this piece of content can potentially attract more customers like that one. But that wouldn't have been possible if I did not sit in on those interviews with the customer to understand all the pain points throughout their experience while using the tool.
Okay, that's interesting. I quite like that. At the moment with my in my role, I'm also so I'm exploring how, because the team is very new, and you know how people say data is centric to the business, but then no one in the business knows what data is doing. And because the team is very new, and it's not a data team, it's an AI team.
Interesting.
So it's an opportunity to actually fix that problem before having it happening. So I'm looking into how it can be visible in the organization, how to communicate with various departments and business functions and all these things. And so there is this other person who is a specialist in user experience that's working with me on these kind of things. And I'm learning so much. I find it quite fun, actually.
Yeah, I feel like that's a common theme in a lot of data roles. It's like you have to work very cross-functionally because data is just so embedded in all parts of a business's decisions, even if the business folks don't really, or they're not very data literate, right? Like you still have to use data. And so you as this data professional, your talent is like such a rare commodity that you have to lend your hands out to other people within the organization to be truly effective.
That's very beautifully put. And to close this episode, can I ask you what resource you use that helps you in your career and personal development?
Yeah, I swear I didn't plan this answer, but podcasts. I told you that when I was first breaking in, I would binge podcasts because I used to drive a lot back and forth between like one city and where my boyfriend at the time had lived. And so those like hour-long car rides, I would just be listening to podcasts the entire time. And I really viewed podcasts as a way to tap the minds of people who were a couple or many steps ahead of me in my career, because at the time I hadn't built out my network yet. So I couldn't really go out and talk to folks who were potentially mentors, right? Like, or maybe, I mean, I could have, but at the time, like my networking muscle was not strong. And so I was like, what better way to be able to hear these conversations and be a fly on the wall in those conversations that I wanted to take part of than listening to podcasts where, you know, I could listen to people talking about how they progressed in their career or like the problems that they faced without having to like really like come out of my comfort zone. I could just like listen to it in the comfort of my own car, right? And so now being on the flip side and being part of these podcasts, I'm like remembering back to when I used to think, man, one day I want to be on these podcasts. And so like truly, like, it's been so cool to see that like I have now been a podcast guest on almost all the podcasts that I actually listen to. And it's turned out to be pretty good because there have been a lot of people who have messaged me and been like, I loved your podcast talk. And I was like, I was in your shoes a couple of years ago, and these podcasts helped me so much. And so to have that full circle moment, I'm just like, I feel like I did something right by starting off with using podcasts as my resource to like learn about the industry.
Yeah, I love that. And it's interesting because when I listen to podcasts, yes, I want to hear about people's experience, but it's not coming from the, I don't have the network. It's more like different perspective and wanting to see
this.
But when I started this podcast, it was to solve for this exact problem that you had. But give me your top three podcasts. Do not say Women in Data.
Let's see. These are very obvious ones, like Ken G's podcast, Harpreet Sahota. I don't know if he is still running.
He's not doing the happy hours anymore, but
not the happy hours, but he had The Artist of Data Science. Back in the day, I listened to that one a lot. And then also I recently recorded an episode with my friend Sadie St. Lawrence for her Data Bytes podcast. And so I always love binging, listening to and going on podcasts about women in data. Obviously, like this is one, right? But I think listening to people who are like you embarking on careers that you want to have, it's just so much better to listen to because you're like, hey, this person is just like me. Like I could do this one day too. So I have a soft spot for podcasts about women in data.
I hear that. thank you so much, Megan, for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure to be chatting with you. I loved it.
I am so glad we finally got to film this because we have just been chatting back and forth for so long. So I'm glad we finally got to connect and share this conversation with the world.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening to the Women in Data podcast. We will be back in a couple of weeks with a new guest. Until then, if you have 2 minutes, it would be great if you could leave us a rating or a review, as it helps not only to make the podcast more visible, but also to enhance the content. If you don't want to miss the next episode, follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We are also on LinkedIn. And if you wish to, you can even register to the community for free. All you have to do is head to womenindata.co.uk. Have a great day.